young girl who's finally left home and she's out on her own. And she's really proud of herself because she's now fully independent. She's not living on the company dole anymore, and she just wants to show off to her family that she's independent. So she calls up her mom and says, I really want to have Easter dinner over at our house. I want the whole family over, and I want to do our traditional family ham. How do we do our family ham? And mom says, well, first you get a 40-pound ham, and you cut it in half, and you get some cloves, and you get some garlic, and you cook it about 400. And the girl says, why do we get a 40-pound ham and cut it in half? And mom says, that's a family tradition. It's the way we've always done things, and I don't know. Let me call up grandma. So mom calls up grandma and says, why do we get a 40-pound ham and cut it in half? And grandma says, I learned that as a little girl. We have always done it. It's a family tradition. We have always done it this way, but let me check with great-grandma. So grandma calls up great-grandma and says, why do we get a 40-pound ham and cut it in half? Grandma says, that's the size oven I had. Well, I like that joke for a reason, and that is that it highlights something that is very true in life, and that is sometimes there are great solutions to problems, and as the situation that created those problems disappears, the solution remains. And sometimes the solution can become the problem. And I'm not going to do a lot today other than, I hope, provoke some conversation. I want to provoke some thoughts about how it is we go about doing AFIX and what it is that we can do to maybe accelerate and leverage the impact that you all have with all of the providers that you interact with. So what do we know? I've raised three teenagers, and I don't know a lot anymore. But I do know this, and that is that AFIX is a very powerful tool. And not only is it a very powerful tool, it fits into classic quality improvement paradigms. It fits because you collect a bunch of data, and you collect it about a process. And you use that process to analyze inputs, things that happen to make something occur, and outputs. What's the consequence of everything you've just done? And based on that analysis, you develop action plans. And based on those action plans, you remeasure and you reevaluate and you keep going in a cycle. But I want to push us a little bit on that notion. Because in every other industry but medicine, in every other industry but public health, we use guiding measurements. Guiding measurements have some very specific characteristics. The first is they inform rather than grade. So it isn't measuring just an output. It isn't measuring just the product of something. Instead, it measures the processes that produce that product. It measures the antecedents, the things that led into and contribute to and control and constrain the output. And they always use SMART measurements. SMART measurements, because everyone loves acronyms, means that they're simple, measurable, accessible, relevant, and timely. All of five of those characteristics are really essential to having a guiding measurement, to having something that can help inform and direct people in doing a better job. There are some other things that are associated with guiding measurements. The first is that as you get involved with a program, a process, a company, a business, a clinic, whatever it is, that as you start to intervene, you try and lessen the burden of the measurements themselves. You try and decrease the footprint. You've got people's attention. Now you want to get out of the way. And you look for, as I said, antecedents and proxies. So if we're interested in up-to-date status for the citizens of the United States, what's a good proxy for that? What's an antecedent? What's something that's upstream from that? And can we go further and further upstream so that we understand what it is that leads to those vaccination rates? The other is that you want to move the measurements as close as possible to the point of service. You want to make the measurements be where the activity is happening and not somewhere downstream from it. And the last is you really want to move from external audits to internal audits. You really want to move from an external auditing agency to the entity doing the evaluations themselves, because no one can figure out what to do better with data than the person generating the data. So what's the challenge? First is, whatever we're going to do, we need to have a measurement and feedback system that's going to acknowledge this reality. Clinic staff are just overwhelmed. They have a lot of external accountabilities. I heard in the hallways when I was coming in today that public health is doesn't know what to do with all the bucks that are coming in. Your budgets are overwhelming. You've got more money than you know what to spend. But the private sector may not be quite so lucky. There are enormous financial pressures out there, and there are a lot of auditing agencies. There's a lot of these externalities that are really causing them to think twice about how well they're going to play with public health and other sort of entities. And the other is that they're always evaluated on their performance. They're always evaluated on what they achieved. And in most settings, providers are being measured by how many patients they see per period of time and what their patient satisfaction ratings are. So if we don't recognize that reality, whatever measurements we do, whatever guiding we do, is really going to be misspent. And the last is that they often feel very much undervalued, and like people don't appreciate the amount of effort that goes into their jobs. The other reality is whatever we do has to be done on a large scale. We have to do something other than brute force. We have to do something where we leverage the personnel and the resources that are there so you're getting the maximum bang for the buck that's possible. Steve just gave a great presentation on one way of thinking about that. We've got to leverage better, and we've got to be able to do these things at multiple sites, and we have to maintain some sort of methodological rigor. We have to be sure that what we're doing is true, or at least accurate. And the other is that it's got to be cost effective. So with those sort of thoughts in mind, what can we do in terms of AFIX? Well, we have standardized. Our gold standard has always been up-to-date status. But what I want to do is sort of provoke and think about how we might switch our audit and feedback processes to missed opportunities. Doesn't mean we give up on up-to-date status, but maybe we do up-to-date status in a completely different way. The first is, given the context of what guiding measurements are, I'm going to challenge how well up-to-date status really fits into that for a clinic. To start off with up-to-date status, the best we do is once a year. And what that means is any changes that occur, particularly with up-to-date status for two-year-olds, you don't see a change for 2 years. How well do you think you could drive a car if the directional change happened once every 2 years? Now, if we switch to missed opportunities, and the way we do missed opportunities is it's at least done quarterly, and at most of our facilities, it's done monthly, which means that it's done right now. Which means that that input, the changes, the direction, the information can happen immediately as opposed to waiting for a year. And any changes that occur show up right away. So the level of feedback is immediate and far more responsive, and it allows people to feel like they have better control over what's going on. The other thing is administrations. These clinic administrators, they really want to know how can they separate what's going on with the clinic, that's sort of a system issue, versus what's happening with an individual provider. Are our up-to-date status numbers because this doc's a bad doc, because we ran out of vaccine, because we don't document? I mean, there's a series of reasons for why it is that up-to-date status is what it is. And yet, what does that up-to-date status tell us? It only tells us an output. It doesn't tell us the antecedents. It doesn't give us an identification of the inputs. If we go to missed opportunities, it allows us to separate the individual provider from the clinic conditions, from sort of outside systematic issues. Does a clinic really want to try and control and improve if it's a vaccine shortage issue? How much effort does a clinic realistically want to put into that? And as I said, missed opportunity allows the program to look at what are the individual issues that are contributing to the overall rate. Continuing on that line, you have to recognize that most of the facilities you're now dealing with are on pay-for-performance measurements. And part of pay-for-performance means that they have to do peer review. That's just a reality. And anything that we ask them to do that is different from, that is added to, is going to be perceived to be a burden. So the other thing is that they need to be able to measure multiple preventive services at once. And one of the things that has worried me all along with the dramatic sort of inroads that the immunization community has made is that we've done it in a way that's sort of independent from all of the other preventive measures, and we're now at risk of being seen as an opportunity cost. So they can focus on immunizations, or they can focus on pap smears, or they can focus on lipid screening, or they can focus on. And I'm going to give you an anecdote very quickly. I was out doing a study for you all in which we were looking at factors affecting adoption of clinical practice guidelines, in particular with adoption of the new standards for vaccinations. And we were in this one facility where the management was sitting together and they said, we've got to do better with our 0 to 2 year old vaccinations. And so what we need to do is look at the schedule, figure out what kids we have that are eligible for what shots when. We put that algorithm into our scheduler. Our scheduler will then set kids' appointments. Our automatic phone dialer will give them notice 3 days ahead of time. If they don't show up, we'll tell the doc that they're missing and what do they want us to do. The doc will tell us, go get them. We'll send them 2 letters. If they don't respond, we'll send them a phone call. If they don't respond, we'll send them to County Health. County Health will grab by the ear, bring them in. That crew then left. And although the CEO and the medical director and the CFO were there, a new crew came in and they said, we're working on diabetes. And what we need to do is hemoglobin A1C and foot care and eye exams. And so what we need to know is, what diabetic patients do we have and what schedule do they need to be on? And we need to figure out how to put that schedule into our automatic scheduler, which will then schedule those patients for appointments, and they will then get a phone call 3 days ahead of time, and if they don't show up, we'll tell the doc, we'll ask the doc what they want to do. The doc will tell us, go get them. We'll give them 2 letters, and then we'll give them a phone call. If they don't show up, we'll give them to this special program in San Diego that goes out and grabs people out of the year and brings them in for their appointments. They develop 2 completely different processes. They developed the same processes, but they did it twice because they were focusing on the disease instead of on the process. I really want us to think about how we can fold vaccination processes, vaccination improvement processes, into a general quality improvement process for preventive services as a whole. So how do we do this? And I'll tell you, we've been doing this for a while, and I'm not going to show you a lot of data, but I'll show you some. The first is, our staff come out and do the initial assessments, but after that, the clinic staff does it. Because what we do is we teach them how to do their own evaluations. And we give them tools and protocols and training and all that stuff, but we trust them to want to do as good a job as we want them to do. We have faith in the providers. The second is, we're not measuring up-to-date status, but we're measuring missed opportunities. And we define missed opportunities as any shot a kid could have gotten, or an adult or an adolescent, that they didn't. Meaning if they were eligible for 6 at that visit and they got 5, it's still a missed opportunity. The third thing is that we do it at least quarterly. We actually have most of our facilities doing it monthly. And the rules are that for every provider who can vaccinate under their own license, you pull 5 charts. Those 5 charts are reviewed, and the report is given to the medical director or their proxy, and that person sits down once a month and goes over the missed opportunity rates with that provider and says, tell me what happened. And I'll show you what we do with that afterwards. So there's immediate feedback to those providers, but more important, the facility, the management gets a sense as to where it is that they're having problems and why. And as I said, we not only give them tools that deal with vaccinations, with missed opportunities for vaccinations, we give them tools and a process that can deal with all preventive measures. So in fact, when they sit down with that provider, they're usually going over 3 or 4 preventive measures at once. The other is, this is a really important thing. So we're talking about missed opportunities, but what I'm really, really, really covertly talking about is fundamentally changing your role. I'm fundamentally talking about asking you all to go from auditors to facilitators, to going from being people that grade to people that facilitate improvement. Because in fact, you all have more experience than anybody in the country in what really works in clinics. But because of the way we structure things, it's often difficult for you to sort of transmit that as part of your formal practice. So these really bad slides are the best I can do. This is actually an Excel sheet that we give our providers that they use to do their chart extractions. And it generates a missed opportunity box. We always, because I can't keep straight the immunization schedule, I don't know, I think there may be someone who's schizophrenic who creates that thing. Either that or they have a brother-in-law who's an ophthalmologist, and so I can't read it. So we go to our public health folks and ask them to tell us what's true for this 6 months. And what it does is it generates a control chart. Everyone knows what a process control chart is? Tell me yes. There we go. So a process control chart, very briefly, is instead of looking at something pre-post, it looks at changes over time. So you collect a bunch of data points and you look for changes. And you look to see whether the changes are going in the direction you want. And there are some specific ways of looking at process control charts. But this, and I want you to notice some, look at the date up there. This is 2005. This is how long we've been doing it, and I'll show you another one that shows we've been even doing it longer than that. But what this does is, so it fills in each of these process control charts for each of the providers. This is real data from one of the clinics that we deal with. We just stripped out their name. And it automatically generates them for them a process control chart so they can see where they're going. As luck would have it, this clinic was going in the right direction. And not only does it do that, we already talked about how Italians are probably the smartest people on earth. I think that's what Steve was trying to imply with Pareto. We convert this into a Pareto chart. One of the things that Pareto did was, not only did he do the 80-20, he said it's really good to categorize the types of mistakes that happen so people can figure out where they're going to get the biggest bang for the buck. This is what this clinic found out, that they were really good at giving vaccinations and they were really lousy at documenting them. So they would sit down with the doc, and the doc would say, I gave that shot, but you know what? I was so busy that day, I didn't fill the chart out for 3 days, and I forgot. And so what this particular clinic also did, which is sort of why they like us to play with them, is they went back and realized that not only did they not document, they didn't bill. So it then creates this simple chart, not unlike what Steve was doing, but much simpler. And it says, here's where your biggest problems are. Decide where you want to play. Now, we have some other things that we do with them. We help them recognize what their pattern of strengths and weaknesses are. Are they really good with management? Are they really good with IT? Are they really good? Because their strength is where you have to look at where they're going to solve problems. They're not going to solve problems with their weaknesses. You help build their weaknesses, but they're going to solve problems with their strengths. And if they have an IT issue and they're not very good at IT, they need to select a different problem first. And here's an example of where we generate these parallel charts, not only for immunizations. I don't know if you guys can see it. This is pneumo and influenza, as well as little kid shots, as well as pap smears, and it happens to go all the way down. This one includes hemoglobin A1C and lipid screenings and mammograms and the vaccinations, because those are the ones that we like to play with the most. But look how nice and simple this is. So a clinic can see what's going on, and you might be able to tell on the second chart where the missed opportunity rate went through the ceiling and then came back down. Guess what happened that year? Vaccine shortage. So do you see sort of the simplicity of it and sort of the beauty of moving something to the provider so that they can get a sense as to what they are doing and they can select where they're going to intervene and they can match up their interventions with the evaluation and they have control over their place, and what you all become are folks that have expertise in helping them solve their problems rather than telling them that they have a problem. That's a really nice move. So you all become facilitators instead of auditors. And your job, and this is what our staff does, they come out and they monitor how well clinics are evaluating themselves rather than evaluating their practice. And they act, again, to help facilitate and help them become better at doing quality improvement, which includes better at billing. Our staff and you all become perceived as quality improvement experts, and you are valued. Instead of those, we're really busy and it's going to be about 3 months before we can get you in, you're invited in relatively quickly, and in fact, you get calls. It captures best practices because you all get to see a lot of people solving the same problems over and over again. And by using this sort of process, by becoming a consultant and a facilitator, you're able to capture those best practices and methods for solving things. And when you see a new clinic with a new problem that's an old problem, you already have some solutions for them. And it leverages FTEs in a way that you probably can't do any other way. If you're going out and doing up-to-date status and standard sort of AFIX, it takes an awful lot of time. We've actually measured. We know what the costs are. And we know what the costs are for doing it this way. And I will tell you that by switching to facilitating missed opportunities, you can see 4 times as many practices as you are with their standard method. And the other thing, which I want to really underscore, if you are in a practice with 5 providers and they're grabbing 5 charts a month, think of the data that you then have to play with as opposed to collecting up-to-date status, and no one's really doing costs anymore. We're all doing some hybrid, some lot quality assurance. But think of the data that you have to play with. Because one of the things these guys do is not only do they do it for themselves, but they report the results to us. They present us their solutions, and they also present us their data. So we have this huge data set of what's going on. Very nice from an epidemiological standpoint. But nothing in life is a pure play. One of the things you have to be aware of and be concerned about is whether or not a practice is going to game the system. The advantage here, though, is that they're not gaming us because I don't really care what they do. We're there to help them, but I don't get a paycheck from them. So if they want to fool themselves, that's their business. There are ways of catching. Part of the values of process control charts is it's really easy to catch if someone's cheating. You can't really game that, and most facilities aren't smart enough to know how to do the math on it. But it's always possible for a clinic to game the system. And so you have to be on the alert for that. The other is that vaccination consultants are going to be asked to contribute to non-vaccine related quality improvement stuff. Are we able to do that? Are we willing to do that? If someone says, I'm also having problems with lipid screenings and it looks to me like it's the same thing, can we consult on that? There's also a real reluctance to let go of the gold standard, to let go of up-to-date status. We have done it for so long. We have cut that ham in half so often that it's hard to sometimes let go. But I'm going to argue maybe it's not so good to do it on a clinic-by-clinic basis, but rather for us to continue with the national survey that we do. Maybe that's where that's most appropriate. And I'm going to leave it at that, because I'm really, really counting on provoking questions rather than giving a lot of solutions today. So on that note, I'm going to leave it be, and Steve will come up, and we'll be up for questions.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. What questions do you have or comments would you like to make to either presenter?
Yeah,
just raise your hand or perhaps stand. And yes, actually, there's a mic. Thank you, Nancy. There's a mic. If you'd walk to the mic, please.
I guess this is probably a question for Steve, although I certainly see the relationship between your two discussions. I haven't been scientific about this, and I'm actually very new at this, but, you know, intuitively, I think I realized it made sense to spend time with the bigger practices. However, the bigger practices in my area tend to be the community health centers, which are more sophisticated, have more, you know, sophisticated players, and you know, are JCO accredited, so they go through more scrutiny. And, I mean, I guess I'm falling back on the up-to-date rates, but they do better. So, you know, I've been, maybe there's some algorithm for this, but do I want to spend more time with the big practices that are already doing better or the smaller ones that are struggling?
Yeah, that was definitely some pushback from the field because they had the same sort of impression that the larger practices were doing well. But I actually took a look at the vaccine loss data, and at least in California, vaccine losses in high-volume practices, the way I drew them up, are four times as much as they are per event, four times as much as they are in... and actually, if you look at the totals, even though there's only one-seventh or, you know, 300, 500 practices that are in that high category, they actually counted for the highest amount among those three categories of vaccine losses, just because there was more losses per event. So I wouldn't paint them with a broad stroke in being sort of, you know, at least in our state, there are issues in high volume practices as well. And we don't really do enough assessments, we're trying to change that to really get a sense for whether the high volume practices are all immunizing at a high level as well. We don't really have the data right now, but I suspect if the vaccine loss is an issue that you know, complete immunization completion. Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm new to this, so could you just define for me vaccine losses?
Well, it's basically expired vaccine and or, you know, catastrophic loss of vaccine. So, you know, we had $2 million worth of loss last year, which is pretty manageable, but 800,000 of it was among these high volume practices. So, and that was the highest of those three categories. So, you know, when they lose vaccine, they lose a lot of vaccine.
Can I do a quick response too? So, one of the things that happens in public health is we tend to spend an awful lot of time with folks that are doing badly. What's wrong with spending some time with folks that are doing well and helping them do a little bit better? Yeah, so I'm going to argue that even though those folks are already doing well, that's no reason not to visit them, because if you can bop them up by a couple of percent, given the fact that they are such a large percentage of your population, you're going to have an exponential effect on your coverage rates. And it never hurts to learn from those that are doing well.
Yeah. Hi. I'm Jerry Fairbrother from Ohio, and I have a question for John Fontanese. Our state is also starting to do quality improvement, apply quality improvement science to practices, and the topic that our state is interested in first at the onset is improving developmental screening, which would fit really well into immunization. The focus for all this comes from Medicaid through the managed care plans. The managed care plans are the ones that are doing the monitoring and are doing the pay-for-performance to the extent that it exists. Yes. So the question is what, I know I hear that you're pushing the focus to the provider level, so it doesn't matter about Medicaid and the health department above that, but do you see a way for Medicaid and the health department to be, what's the right answer to the fact that the health department does surveillance and Medicaid is where the money is and where the operational controls are?
We're actually working with Medicaid on exactly that issue, and so I'm going to do it on two levels. The first is, will this model fit developmental assessments? And the truth is it will. It's pretty straightforward. You just figure out what are some of the objective measures and you put them in. They're part of a chart review. On the more important question, our group has been working really hard and making very slow progress in getting at a national level people to recognize the difference between audits and measurements. And that's really at the core of the question. And it's been very hard for people to let go of these outcomes, these audits.
because we paid X amount of money, we want to know what we're getting for it. But there are some pilot projects that are starting in a couple of states that are Medicaid funded, and they're not only happening with private providers, but they're starting to happen in laboratory medicine as well, where they are starting to focus on the process of doing a good job rather than the outcome of doing a good job. I'll flip it over and say that every other industry in America does it this way. It is only healthcare and public health that continue to focus on just an output. And we've got to let go of it. And it's us that's going to make that happen. So it's the best I can answer.
I just want to reinforce the value of the missed opportunity audits. We shared up-to-date rates. I even made copies for providers about missed opportunities without names. But until we went into the clinic, and I actually did the audits like at lunchtime so that the provider was still there and remembers the child that they saw about an hour ago, and brought the chart over to them and said, you know, what happened here? And we would talk about it. And that made a huge difference. They actually changed their practice based on looking at their own practices, and it was great. So.
Sort of pushing on that, one of the issues with up-to-date status is I it happens to be that I'm a terrific provider, and it's really Steve that's been screwing up our practice. So tell me how you know that with up-to-date status. Missed opportunity, it turns out that I was covering for Steve's patients, and he has lousy patients. That's why I missed some opportunities. So.
John, how widely has this been implemented in San Diego County? Is it countywide? Is it in certain settings? Is it in the process of being tried?
It's beyond San Diego County. It's in the network of providers that play with us. We have a loose affiliation, and they're throughout California, and it includes big guys like the VA. The VA is really into this. This very much fits into the VA's way of doing business with their new methods, and it is a little bit with Kaiser, but it also is with a lot of medium and large size providers, both federally qualified health centers. We're also doing it with some of the public health centers. We were doing it in Santa Barbara, and we're doing it a little bit in San Diego. So a wide variety of providers can do this. They just have to be willing and be provided the tools.
So I don't know, Steve, if this is a question you can answer, but it sounds like maybe it's happening in some places that would be visited by California field staff. Is that correct or not?
Well, there's a project in the works to actually expand this to the entire state and do it in different regions. So we're working with John to do that.
Hi. This question is for Dr. Fontanesi. What tools are you giving to providers, and how easy is it to train providers to use these tools?
So we give them a whole bunch of tools. And my administrative analyst is going to kill me, but all of these tools are public domain. They've all been paid for by various federal grants, so they're public domain. Anyone can have them under certain conditions. You can't sell them. There's simple things, but they're all public domain. We're glad to share them with you if you tell us what to do to make them better. That's number one. And that's what we do with our providers. We have a very extensive toolkit of things that we use and trainings that our staff go through. And just so that you appreciate it, half of the folks that go out there are in fact undergraduate students who are doing this as part-time as part of school. So it's doable, it's very doable, and we're glad to share.
Yeah.
Well, you know, again, we're not ignoring the sort of regionally challenged, areas of the state. Everybody is included in, the design of this plan. And basically, we leave it up to the field staff. I mean, they're supposed to be visited every 4 years regardless. So we leave it up to the field staff to organize their site visits in such a way. All we want is at the end of the year, these numbers add up to 1 to 1 to 1. We don't care how they do it. So you know, that gives them a lot of leeway to sort of, you know, sort of geographically arrange their visits as is appropriate. So.
What other questions? Yeah. If I could just repeat that briefly, you probably all heard it, but who do you train in the office because of turnover issues? Who do you make sure that's in on the training?
Yeah, and that's a terrific question. It's an issue. It's one of the reasons why we move away from having immunization champions, because they get hired by better paying people. So there's a couple of things that we do. One is that we do everything we can to turn our activities into policies and procedures, where it becomes institutionalized rather than embedded in an individual. That's number one. Number two, part of what our sales pitch is that if we help a facility do the job they want to do, they have better control over it, and actually staff satisfaction goes up. So those of you that know me know I can't go through a talk without doing the quality triangle. Quality is always composed of three facets: some measure of efficiency, some measure of satisfaction, some measure of outcome. We always, always, always measure satisfaction, and in our case, we always measure staff satisfaction. When you put these processes in place, satisfaction actually goes up and turnover decreases. Clinics like us. So there are ways of dealing with that. It's not perfect, but in our field, we just try and make things better.